If you've ever attended the Amelia Earhart Festival in Atchison, Kansas, then you're familiar with an event that's been a staple of that weekend every year since its inception. It's called Breakfast with the Books, an event that brings Amelia Earhart authors to the town where the legend began to present their stories and discuss AE's enduring legacy. A couple of years ago, while I was holding my event for Rabbit Hole, my next guest was there as a featured author for Breakfast with the Books and presentation of a story that we'll be discussing tonight. She's crafted one of the most clever ideas for a work of fiction that I've ever read. And if you're an Amelia Earhart fan, you'll be absolutely thrilled at the way it's presented and the attention she's paid to all the little details that have helped make Amelia Earhart's legend grow for almost 90 years. If you've ever wondered what it would be like for Amelia Earhart to meet Nancy Drew or Clue, get ready, because this is a mystery within a mystery. And it's set in one of the most iconic Earhart landmarks in the entire world. Welcome back to Chasing Earhart. From 223 North Terrace Street in Atchison, Kansas, this is Kristen Gray and the Amelia Six. All right, Kristen, welcome to Chasing Earhart. This is going to be fun. I appreciate you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. This has been a long time coming, so I'm excited to be here.
It has been a long time coming. Okay, so the book is The Amelia Six. We're going to get into everything that we can here tonight. Let's get some housekeeping out of the way as we begin. This is Chasing Earhart, after all, and this is your debut. So I'll ask you the same two warm-up questions we ask everybody that sits down on this show. Tell me about your education, your professional background. We'll start with that tonight.
My background was actually in pediatric nursing. That's what I went to school for. I have five kids. They're all young adults now. But after my second son was born, I ended up staying home and working remotely as a technical writer for a medical software company.
Yeah.
And that's how I got my feet wet writing. But I've always been a big reader. I've always loved mysteries. The reading bug caught me up again when I started reading with my kids.
Yeah.
And remembering how fun children's stories are and just wide open adventure. Anything is possible. That's when I started writing for that age bracket.
Yeah. All right. Well, the second question we ask everybody that sits in that chair is, can you remember the first time you heard the name Amelia Earhart?
Oh my gosh. I would say third or fourth grade.
Okay.
And he is linked in my brain with Helen Keller.
Huh.
I was born deaf in my left ear. And so I think the same time, you know, that we as kids learned about all of these famous Americans,
yeah.
I guess they're just linked together in my brain of being just intrepid, really cool, badass woman.
Yeah. So, yeah. No, I couldn't agree more. That's an interesting pairing, and it's a good one. Helen Keller and Amelia Earhart. That's a good one. All right. Well, you know, I was going through your website a few days back in prep for the chat tonight, and I wasn't surprised, of course, after reading the book, to learn that you grew up with Charlotte's Web, James and the Giant Peach, Ramona and Beezus, and all those really iconic franchises and stories as influences. There are elements of all of those in the book. Are you thinking of those experiences while you're structuring this thing out, just in the beginning when you're trying to develop the story?
That's a good question. I think they say write what you love. And
yeah.
When you work on these stories, you're signing up for a good 2 years plus. That's a lot of time to spend, you know, with a novel. You have to love it to be able to show up every day. And yes, so I absolutely think I'm drawn to creepy old houses and ghosts and mysteries and anything with heart or humor.
Yeah.
Those are found in those just good stories. You know, the feelings that they stir up inside you.
Yeah.
It's the same feelings of adventure, to call it adventure, you know, while we like movies and yeah, and good cinema.
That's a good point. We're going to try to get to as much as we can. This book is it's a special experience and just a fun little aside that I certainly appreciate. And I think listeners of the show will appreciate. When you open the book and you see the title page, it's not the Amelia Six. It's the Amelia Six in Amelia Earhart Mystery. So touche. For that one.
Yeah.
That's really neat because it's a mystery within a mystery. And I love that.
Thank you. That was my editor and the marketing team. That, yeah, I love. Yeah. And it might've been honestly a lot for SEO, you know, for the search engine optimization, but I love that they did it.
Yeah. That was a wise choice. A fun little nod. Really, really cool. For authors, I always have to ask the why question. So taking on, you know, story like this, it's a huge undertaking. What makes you decide to dive into this world and write the book? Why Earhart?
Funnily enough, my family and I took a road trip to the house for research because I thought I was going to write a picture book.
Huh.
And then once I arrived at the house and met Lou, who's a legend in her own right, the old museum caretaker of 30 plus years.
Oh, yes.
Quickly, I came to realize this was way bigger than a 32-page, you know, children's storybook. And several of those had been done before, but the house became, the setting became a character to me in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
The house is just so special. And then you get into, just the whole mystery surrounding her disappearance, but there was so much more than that. All of her side hustles, or how she paid for her flying lessons. There's just so much information surrounding this remarkable individual and her family and the 99s that there was no way I could constrain it to 12 spread, you know, storybook.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it shows, and we'll get into a lot of it. The book is chock full of characters, but it centers around six young girls. And I want you to take me through the process of fleshing out these six young women. I imagine this is where you can have a lot of fun with all of the distinct backgrounds and personalities coming together. I mean, you know, the character building here is really fun. Can you go through that process with me?
Yeah, thank you. That was really fun. I for ages on my desktop had stock photos of six different kids and just these anonymous random girls that I had, and they kind of inspired, you know, their personalities and looks, and I just kind of chose their hobbies and interests, things that interested me or made me laugh or I thought would be really interesting for, you know, the audience. I will say my editor and I went round and round, and I have gotten some feedback accordingly that it's almost too many characters. Mm-hmm. It's hard to keep, and it was an ordeal to keep them distinct.
Yeah, sure.
But there were just so many different avenues that I wanted to explore. I needed a couple other girls.
Yeah, I love it. I love the distinctions. It's really well done. And since you mentioned, I wasn't going to bring up Lou, but since you mentioned Lou Foudre earlier, is Birdie based off of Lou Foudre?
Absolutely, 100%.
You can almost tell. Absolutely. You can almost tell.
She is a firecracker.
Yeah, she really is. As someone who knew Lou very well, I will tell you that you did a wonderful job of crafting Birdie with respect to Lou and some of the characteristics, and just, you know,
yeah,
that was really well done. So again, kudos to you since we're on character.
Well, thanks. Although I don't think the apartment is now offices.
I
don't think they have the upstairs.
It is. Yeah. It's a little different now, but I've been through there recently, spoken with Heather at length, and yeah, they're doing wonderful things with the museum to continue Lou's legacy there, which is like, as you said, it's in and of itself an incredible legacy.
Yeah.
Well, all right. In typical Chasing Earhart fashion, every time I have an author on here that writes a book, you know, that's got fictional elements to it, I do what I'm about to do. We're going to spoil the hell out of this book tonight. So if you're hearing this and you don't want to be spoiled, I'm going to give you a quick second, pause the podcast, go get the book, read it with your kids or even on your own, and then come back for the discussion. So we'll pause for just a second. Okay, it's just us now, or whoever wants to be spoiled, and we're going to continue. All right, Kristen, let's have some fun tonight. Give us the plot, and let's get into the Amelia Six.
Okay, six girls win a nationwide contest that's focused on STEM to spend the night at Amelia Earhart's childhood home, which is her grandparents' home in Atchison, Kansas. And it's complete with scavenger hunt and a raging blizzard. In the course of the evening, Amelia's flight goggles go missing. So it's up to the six girls to kind of put their differences aside and come together and return the goggles to the rightful place.
All right. So that is the story. That's the basic story. You did a good job of not spoiling any details, but it's a good story. And we're going to get into the nooks and crannies as much as we can. This is Amelia Earhart meets Clue. I think it's really, really cool. And I think kids that are listening to this, that want to go out and get this book, I mean, you're going to have a really neat experience. And you touched on the Birthplace Museum earlier. You know, it's a major character in the story. And even I, as I'm reading through the book the first time, I'm realizing how big a character Amelia's home plays. You mentioned going there, spending some time there, talking with Lou. How much fun is it to bring all of the little details of the museum to life? Because this is a house that is, if you walk it, it's really incredible. And you can really, they have something called Focus Friday, for the museum that they do, where it's really like they focus on a very specific aspect of the museum. It's that detailed. That must have been a blast to do for the book.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I could live in that space of researching and never get around to the writing.
Yeah.
Because it's my most favorite thing. You just want to throw in everything in the kitchen sink and then the things that you have to leave out. But yes, I love it. And the museum's actually started doing tours for schools and classrooms and kids based on the scavenger hunt that I made up in the book. So that's
fantastic.
Really fun.
That must be great. That's got to be some really great vindication as a writer, though, when you put something out, a piece of work like this, and you know, you set it in a place like this, that's a real, you know, living, breathing place. And that museum ends up baking, you know, its tour information stuff into your book. That's awesome.
It is cool. But I also think, you know, those years absolutely shaped Amelia into, you know, who she grew up to be, you know, that time with her grandparents. And so the house absolutely had a part in that.
Absolutely. I lovingly refer to the goggles as Chekhov's goggles, to make a narrative reference. So, you know, Earhart's goggles have been, you know, they've become quite famous in their own right in recent years. We know Jeff Bezos is a big fan. He famously touts, you know, he touts them as he stands next to Wally Funk, you know, during their press trip. The goggles are a nice MacGuffin because they're such a piece of Earhart. But when I'm reading it, I'm wondering, was there ever any thought to using anything other than the goggles for the MacGuffin for the story? Or was it always the goggles? Did you just kind of know it was going to be them?
I actually started out wanting to do like in true Clue fashion, like a murder.
Yeah.
The editorial feedback was maybe that would be too violent for, you know, 12-year-olds. So I had to come up with something a little more, you know, more safe, Scooby-Doo type feel with it, you know, being a true caper. And so that's how I landed on the goggles. Of course, she had multiple pair of goggles, but these are the most famous.
Right.
But they weren't actually housed at the museum in my trips there. And of course, now they're owned by a private
investor.
But they did go up, I think, on a Blue Origin flight, correct?
They did. Yeah, they did. There's a lot of you know, famous pictures of Bezos with the goggles up to his eyes and standing next to Wally Funk and all that. So yeah, it's a nice pick. It's a practical pick. It makes a lot of sense that something like that would be you know, would be the MacGuffin. And the goggles are part of her history, which is you know, a huge deal. So I've been touting it all night, but it's very true. I mean, if you're an Earhart fan of any kind, this is a book full of Easter eggs and subtle little nods to Earhart herself. The most obvious two for one is being, of course, the name of the protagonist, Amelia Ashford, Mealy for short. She's called by different names, of course, in the books, but it's always a play on that.
Correct.
And there's a really nice play of her being kind of a loner, which touches on some of the lore in Earhart's years when she went into high school and things like that. It just keeps going. Tell me about pulling from Earhart's life and her lore to create a work of fiction. I mean, you are not restrained to what a lot of authors have to be restrained to when they're telling the Earhart story. That must be freeing.
Yes. And actually that came into play more with elements of the house. I tried to stay really true to Earhart as much as possible. But I did move some things around in regards to the home just to make the feasibility of the plot play out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, spoiler.
Oh, we're way past that.
I know, we're way past that. The girls stumble upon a secret passageway. And then I found out later when I was getting closer to printing and the text was locked. And so I was unable to make changes. Mm-hmm. But I believe it's through Haunted Atchison, which Atchison, Kansas is supposedly one of the more haunted cities in the United States.
Oh, yes.
The Otis's home was part of the Underground Railroad, and that Judge Otis, they probably had a trap door in the parlor floor where enslaved people could hide down in the basement. So it was kind of like, oh, that sort of works. But if I'd known earlier, I could have made it, you know, I could have made use of it as being like the secret passageway I created. But I love that.
Me too. I love that. That's awesome. History, it adds a lot, doesn't it? It's really cool.
Yeah.
When you find stuff out. Mm-hmm. And speaking of that, I went into this blind when I read, well, so when I read Earhart fiction, I don't want to know anything about the story because I just love to see what authors' takes are on it. I think that's just the most fun of the story is that part of it, I think. The last line of the opening chapter, though, it kind of gets you because I know that there are a lot of young girls that find a emotional, even spiritual connection to AE somehow. I mean, it's we've experienced it, so I know it's true. And In this story, that connection ties strongly to Mili's mother. She sort of looms over the story. The last line of the chapter, chapter one, I'm going to quote it. "Mom, it's me, Mili. You'll never believe this, but I'm at Amelia Earhart's house." The line sort of informs me that there's going to be some emotional tugs in the book, in the story. And I wonder if that's a conscious decision from the beginning to do that, especially knowing the audience and who you're writing for, to kind of, you know, tug some emotional strings there.
Sure. Always. I always try to aim for a physical external plot and then an emotional arc.
Mm.
And I believe the best stories are when that overarching plot that happens in the physical world intersects with what's going on in the character's inner life.
Yeah.
That's the goal, is to have the heartbeat of the story, the undercurrent of the main plot of the missing goggles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's, you know, we won't spoil everything in the story tonight, but there are some great, great moments. Let's talk a little bit about the disappearance. It looms over the story. As I said in the top of the show tonight, this is a mystery within a mystery, which is really cool. It's not super in your face, but there are a lot of subtle references and details as the reader sort of unpacks the story. The disappearance has its own legacy now. Can it be difficult to figure out where you're going to drop those details in? Like, how does that work? How do you pick and choose what you'd like to include here?
Yeah, that's a good point. Lots of that magic happens in later drafts and in editing.
Mm.
If a fact is a distraction, then I have to cut it. Or if it pulls a reader out of the story or it's not working, the wealth of information available is overwhelming, but also super exciting. I did kind of love that a disappearance of the goggles kind of mirrored, you know, Amelia's own disappearance. But also what I realized is so many other, almost every Earhart book, that's what it's about, right? Is her disappearance. So I wanted this to focus more on her life and what it looked like. She drove a gravel truck. She worked as a nurse during a Spanish flu. It's just so multifaceted, and a social worker. And,
absolutely.
You know, when she was in Boston, she was just a whole person, you know, beyond just her disappearing act. And then, you know, instructor at Purdue, and there's just a lot to encompass.
Yeah.
And I thought the scavenger hunt about her life through the house would be a really fun way, novel way to go about it.
Well, you know, you're right, because the real museum, True Blue, is using it now as we speak. So, you know, you must have done something right with that decision. I think it's a really cool, organic way, you know, within the narrative to unpack her life, for people to see a little bit about her. It's different. And I always applaud anybody who tries to touch the legacy from a different point of view and present it from a different point of view, because it's gotten so difficult to do over the course of the last, 87, almost 90 years now, that she's disappeared. So, but you do a great job in the book. And I think it's really organic, which is, which I think is important. So I know, speaking of that, I know a lot of people that have read the book will have this question on their minds. You said earlier, there's so much information. There's so many things you can do. And there's only so many things you could do in a book for a certain audience. Is there have you thought about a sequel? Can you do more with this?
Yeah.
Will there be one?
Let me tell you, I tried. How about a companion book?
Is
it in the works? I'm waiting on editor feedback right now. The pandemic that we all lived through has definitely slowed some progress down.
Yeah.
But it's called Penguin Ranch, and it's set in Antarctica. If you'll remember in the book, I believe Natalie's mom is stationed on base and works with an emperor penguin colony.
That's right.
As a anthropologist. So it takes off there. It's kids that are flown down there for a week in a junior scientist program, and the research is being sabotaged, so they have to uncover the mole, so to speak. But I will say there's Earhart overlap there as well, because Admiral Byrd, who was a famous Antarctic explorer, was part of our explorers club, who Amelia Earhart's husband George was the president of. And I do, if I remember, I tried to find this before we hopped on our call, but I believe Amelia's the Red Vega came from Admiral Byrd.
Oh.
We'll have to dig into that research. But what she made her transatlantic crossing on, I believe that somehow Byrd had a hand in that plane, or it was his plane that he loaned Amelia.
Very interesting.
It's all related, Antarctica and Earhart. And
very cool. It's 6 degrees of separation.
It
That's
is.
How that works.
It is.
You know, that's really what it is. All right. Well, let's get out of here. As we wrap tonight, I have two final questions for you. The last question will be something that everybody gets to chime in on the show. But for you, in your specific case, what do you want readers to take away from this story, ultimately?
There's a line in the book that says you can be quiet and brave. I think that's what I would like readers to walk away with. That you don't always have to do some splashy, big, huge thing to be brave. You quietly just advocate, you know, for a friend or a neighbor. There's countless ways to show up for yourself and other people. And then just to admire the grit that Amelia had, I say in the book, you know, she, and this is something I learned in my own research. She was not the most skillful pilot at the time, but she was the one with enough nerve to try and to keep trying and to keep reaching, you know, for her goals. And I just think that's really important.
Yeah, well said. All right. Final question of the night. You've written a book that's steeped in, you know, its own mystery, running alongside the real life historical mystery of Earhart's ending. But this is a legacy piece when you get right down to it. And as we end tonight, the floor is yours. Give me your thoughts on the legacy of Amelia Earhart right now as we stand.
Oh, wow. Well, I think she just opened so many doors for women. Just commercial aviation or exploration or being a professor or writing. You know, she had columns in Cosmopolitan and her speaking circuit, traveling the world. Well, and just the lingering mystery, which maybe we're getting closer to solve now, it sounds like, possibly, you know, that's endured for, like you said, almost 90 years. She just really captured the hearts of the world. I just think it's her brave, intrepid spirit that's just makes us all something to aspire to.
Absolutely. Well, couldn't have said it better. This has been a great debut. Links to the book and everything we chatted about in the show's notes for tonight. Kristen, a true pleasure. Thank you for doing this.
Gosh, thank you, Chris. I appreciate it.
This is Chris Williamson, and thank you for listening to this episode of Chasing Earhart. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Please visit us on social media, where we post each new episode as it airs, news, show information, and group discussion. Go to facebook.com/ChasingEarhart, and on Twitter and Instagram, search the handle @ChasingEarhart. Reviews are crucial to the show. If you enjoyed this episode, please head to Apple Podcasts to rate us and leave us a review. It really does help get the word out. Your editor and host for Chasing Earhart is me, Chris Williamson. The show is produced by my wife, Vanessa Williamson, with music by Dane Jarrus Schmidt. The opinions on Chasing Earhart are those of the individual guests and may not reflect those of Madhouse Films Incorporated. Madhouse Films Incorporated is not affiliated with the films or clips referred to herein. All clips and audio used in the podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purposes of historical entertainment and education, and no infringement is ever intended. Chasing Earhart is an exclusive trademark of Madhouse Films Incorporated and may not be used without the express written consent of Madhouse Films Incorporated. All rights reserved. Chasing Earhart is a Madhouse Films production. All rights reserved.